This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have two Americas, so let's talk about how we deal with that, our long-term prospects, what's happening in the Supreme Court, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's have a talk. I brought up this question a bit yesterday online, so let's bring it up to you right now. It's just you and me talking here. Currently, our current status as a country is we have two major systems of transportation in the United States of America, our roads and the airports. Okay? We also have two major political parties. If you belong to another one, that's fine, good for you, but it's Republicans and Democrats. We know that that's who's going to hold power in the country, one of the two. So, one of the two political parties in the country has chosen to effectively shut down one of the two transportation systems in the country. And they've chosen to do this because they don't want illegals deported from the country. Now, what does that mean for the country's future? I don't mean next year. I understand the change is slow. I get that. But I have children. Lord willing, they'll have children one day if they want them. And their children will have children. So let's go to that generation, my great-great-grandchildren. Are they going to have a United States of America if this situation continues? If we have 50% of the political parties essentially operating as terrorists working against the United States of America, do they even have a United States of America? I think you'd be naive to say they would. You can't continue like this. Okay, so that's bad. It's dark. It's ugly. I got all that. But let's talk about this. Dealing with that reality. How do we deal with that reality? I'm going to play you something. And I know Hakeem Jeffries is easy to make fun of. I just don't think he's very intelligent. I used to think more highly of him than I did as an enemy. I thought, well, he's Nancy Pelosi's hand-picked successor. Surely this guy's pretty switched on in some way, right? But the more I hear from him, I think he's just kind of a moron. However, that moron is likely to be the Speaker of the House after the midterm election. So this person you're about to hear from, a moron, yes, but about to be a very, very powerful man in this country. Here he is.
The last thing that the American people need are for untrained ICE agents to be deployed at airports all across the country, potentially to brutalize or in some instances kill them. We've already seen how ICE conducts itself. These are untrained individuals when it comes to doing the current job that they have for the most part, let alone deploying them in close exposure in highly sensitive situations at airports across the country.
Okay. So that's where we are. It's ugly. Future prospects are ugly, but that doesn't help you deal with today. Your children deal with today. What do we do about that? Beyond the political activism part of it, which we can get to, but what do we do about that? First, we have to acknowledge the reality of history. We currently have two different countries. We already do. I know there hasn't been some, praise God, civil war, which would be terrible. Where I'm talking about a modern one that actually ends up dividing the country. There hasn't been some civil war. We haven't officially split and drawn new lines and two new governments. I understand all that, but we do have two separate countries now. We do. And if you don't believe that, I would highly recommend you rewind back to the COVID era and go check out how the different states lived so differently during that time. We have two different countries. So for the happiness of you, your children, their children after them, if it is possible, Maybe it's time to start making plans to get out from communist America before it officially becomes communist America. And I want to stress again, you know, that was going to be the Speaker of the House. Keep all the foreigners in the country. We'll shut down America's transportation system so you can't deport rapists back to Venezuela. That's the Democrat Party now. Well, remember, that party controls completely several states in the United States of America. California, New York, Washington. We'll talk to Brandi Crews in a little bit. That party controls those states top to bottom. And now there are no guardrails on the Democrat Party. There used to be. There used to be because sane people would only let them go so far. And then sane people would step up and say, okay, that's bonkers. All right, we can't do this. All right, no, we can't. Sane people used to be able to keep that Democrat Party between the guardrails. The guardrails are gone. The Democrat voter is now fully insane. And what's more, the Democrat voter demands that insanity out of his elected representatives. So even if you have a relatively moderate Democrat in elected office in the United States of America, you'll never know it. They can't operate that way. If you don't believe me, I would like to introduce you to United States Senator from Arizona, Kristen Sinema. Oh, that's right. She's no longer United States Senator from Arizona because she tried to act in a relatively sane manner, not right-wing by any stretch, a sane manner, and boop, 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 primaried and gone immediately. The Democrat voter now demands this. And so the Democrat voter in a blue area, in a blue state, if you're in one of these blue states, the Democrat voter will continue to demand that your life get worse every single day. The Democrat voter will demand it. And now the Democrat politicians, this is Kathy Hochul, governor of New York, they're stuck on camera now begging people to come back because everyone's leaving.
And being conscious of the facts that I need people who are high net worth to support the generous social programs that we want to have in our state. Right? Now, there are some patriotic millionaires who stepped up. Okay, cut me the checks. I mean, just if you want to be supportive, but maybe the first step should be go down to Palm Beach and see who you can bring back home, because our tax base has been eroded. So I philosophically don't have a problem. It is like I have to look at the fact that we are in competition with other states who have less of a tax burden on their corporations and their individuals. And I would say remote work changed everything. There were people who could only work in an office in Manhattan or work in New York State, and they were captives to our state. They were going to stay. We saw that that's not the case. I mean, you know, Wall Street businesses looking at Texas, they're not going there because they have a nicer governor. I know that for sure. But they're going there because of the tax rate.
You notice the key word she used in that thing? Captives. She essentially said, we thought they were captives. That's how communists think about you. That's how they've always treated the people under their rule. And they will capture you and abuse you to no end. And it's not just with taxes. You hear about this awful, awful story. 18-year-old girl, Sheridan Gorman was her name. Gunned down by an illegal from Venezuela. Surprise, surprise, an illegal released twice by the Biden administration onto the streets of this country. Would you like to hear how the politicians in Chicago respond to a horror like this? Would you like to hear the lack of guardrails now in blue America? Well, here's what they said.
The kids were out doing normal things people do in the neighborhood. And it sounds like this might have been a wrong place, wrong time, running into a person who had a gun. They might have startled this person at the end of the pier unintentionally.
Get out. If you can, get out. The country's already split. Get out. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll talk to Brandi Crews about Antifa in a moment. Before we talk to Brandi, let me talk to you about how you feel after work, after school, after a long day. When that clock hits 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon or evening, depending on who you are you pepped up and ready to go, or are you dying to plop down on the couch? just because you're out of gas. I get emails from people in their 70s telling me they'll finish a long day and want to go for a walk now because they started natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Go get some natural herbal supplements from Chalk in your life. You're about to feel palpably better, and I'm not talking about a cup of coffee type of energy. You're just more alive is the best way I can describe it. And these are natural supplements, the best I've ever had. I personally take a male vitality stack every day. 4 years I've been taking one. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, nobody ever goes to jail, right? But that's not necessarily true. There are some good things happening out there, and with all the crap happening, we should focus on the good things every now and then. Never hurts to stop and smell the roses. So Brandy's going to help us do that. Joining me now, Brandy Cruz, host of the Undivided podcast. Hey, Brandy, is anyone in Antifa going to jail?
Well, yeah, at least 9 people are going to jail, which I think is a good thing, federal prison. And federal prison hits different than state prison or county jail. So certainly the defendants in the Antifa attack at a Texas ICE facility. This is a historic conviction for the federal government. It's the first such conviction after the federal government decided to label Antifa a terror organization. And essentially, they're accused of carrying out what amounted to a terror attack. They shot an Alvarado police officer in the neck. Attempted to kill him, obviously, set off explosive devices. They committed terrorist acts. They're being treated like terrorists in court.
Brandy, can you give us a clue in on these Antifa freaks? Because most people are not as familiar with them as you are. Obviously, we've heard of Antifa. We see the random mugshot with people with half-shaved heads and, of course, rings in their nose and all the other weird crap these people do. But what do they want? Who are these people?
Yeah, so I've been covering Antifa for a long time. I was a mainstream journalist. I was on TV in Seattle for about 10 years. I was a radio reporter in Seattle before that. And so my experience with Antifa goes back to the Occupy days. And so 2011, 2012, they were doing sit-ins on college campuses. They were vandalizing things. They certainly didn't have the level of brazen violence that they have now. They have definitely become more aggressive in their tactics over the years. So from Occupy into the BLM movement in Seattle, the May Day riots in Seattle, and then into the summer of 2020, which resulted in the takeover of 6 square blocks of Seattle. I describe Antifa as, and everybody wants to hand wring and say, oh, you can't, they're just, it's a figment of your imagination. It's not. In fact, when I was in mainstream news, you know, a decade ago, it was very non-controversial to call these people Antifa. I was at a mainstream station, and in our reporting, we would call them Antifa. And now those same stations act like Antifa isn't a thing because all of a sudden President Trump calls them Antifa, right? So I would say if you want to try to define Antifa, this is a group of loosely affiliated far-left extremists that are anti-government, anti-law enforcement, and they seek to use violence, intimidation, to carry out their political and social agenda, whatever it might be. And as I alluded to, that ranges from, you know, being anti-capitalist. And so that's really what the Occupy movement was about. During that time, they would carry out attacks on, you know, banks, Nike stores, big businesses, things like that, that they thought were indicative of capitalism. And then that has turned into an anti-police animus, anti-ICE animus, as you see. So anything they feel like fits their far left agenda, they will then organize and they will carry out violent acts in pursuit of that agenda.
Okay, Brandy, help me understand this, because as much as it pains me to give this group a compliment, as you mentioned, they've been around for a very long time, doing this stuff for a long time. The staying power is impressive. So who's paying for this? Who's organizing this? You know, this isn't some random drugged out turd on the street corner. It's got to go deeper than that.
Well, some of them are random drugged out turds on the street corner. I mean, I would say, and I always characterize Antifa as there are the, I would say 5 to 10% that are diehard for the cause. They will die for the cause. They will go to federal prison for the cause. The ringleader in the Texas case, you know, he was smirking after he was found guilty. Those are the diehard people who he always expected to either die doing what he was trying to do or to go to federal prison for the rest of his life for doing what he was trying to do. And then you had people in that Texas case who were convicted who were weeping in court. These are the people who I think represent about 80% of this faction. These are loners, homeless people, people with mental health issues, people who are developmentally delayed, people who are homeless and will glob on for some sense of belonging. And they are very dangerous because I would say a lot of them are low IQ, but they are looking for belonging. And so they have a real mob mentality. And they don't even really necessarily care what the riot is about or the action is about. They're followers in the true sense of the word. But it's though that 10 to 20% faction of the true believers that we have to concern ourselves with. And when you say they have staying power, one of the things I want to point out and what's so important about this conviction in Texas, one of the reasons they have staying power is because they have gotten away with it. I mean, I have been assaulted by Antifa on numerous occasions. None of them have ever gone to jail. None of them have even ever gone to trial for the attacks on me, for the attacks on colleagues. They've been causing and sowing discord and chaos in Seattle for the better part of 15 years. Very few of them have been arrested and prosecuted for that conduct. And it's because they're on the left and we're in a state and a lot of the areas where Antifa is really, really has a large presence, places like Portland, Oregon, Seattle. These are places where the political class isn't interested in going after them because they're really carrying out and defending the agenda of the political class. So that's one of the reasons why not only have they had such staying power, but their actions and their conduct has gotten increasingly violent over time, because they get away with a little thing. They get away with breaking windows. Then they get away with assaulting and hurling things at police officers and reporters. And then they get away with blocking roads and bridges and access to an airport. And now all of a sudden they think they can get away with murder. They can get away with attempted murder. They can get away with acts of terrorism. And under the Trump administration, I think showing that we see you for what you are, terrorists, and we're going to treat you like terrorists in a court of law is a really significant development when it comes to fighting back against these far left factions.
Have you noticed any change in their behavior or organization since the Trump administration designated them terrorists and since these people started going to trial? Are they backing off at all? Has it worked so far?
I mean, I think in some senses it has. I mean, you still have the tried and true believers who they don't care if they're going to be tried as terrorists, right? They're going to continue. They might organize a little more secretly behind the scenes before they carry out a more well-planned attack. But we saw it instantly, Jesse, over the summer. So as you know, there was an occupation outside the ICE facility in Portland for 3 months or so over the summer. And right at the tail end of that is when President Trump said they were going to be characterized as a domestic terror organization. Almost immediately, and I was consulting with some of my friends who were down there on the ground, like Katie Davis Cord, night after night. I mean, she had been down there almost every night. And she said almost immediately, they seemed less quick to violence. Where, you know, before they would go out, they would get in the face of, you know, independent journalists, they would assault them very brazenly with cameras everywhere. And then Portland police would never arrest them, of course. But when President Trump started to send ICE agents out to effect arrests, was on, you know, TV saying these are domestic terrorists, we'll treat them as such, there was an overnight difference in their conduct. Now, I'm not saying it's made them less dangerous. You know, perhaps they go underground a little bit more, they plan and coordinate a little bit more before they come and carry out some sort of action and attack. In a sense, that might make them even more dangerous. They might start acting more like true terrorists. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual activity on the ground, I also think it has been a wake-up call for that 80% that, you know, aren't the true believers and that were maybe looking for a sense of belonging. And then they see that, oh my gosh, these Antifa terrorists in Texas could go to federal prison for the rest of their lives. I'm not signing up for that.
Well, that's freaking good news. All right, give me some bad news. Tell me about how bad the indoctrination is in the state of Washington, because the emails I get in to my show about what people's kids are going through in that state, it's amazing. The state of Washington somehow flies under the radar as everyone dogs on California.
I know, and it bothers me, and I just want to go to the White House and knock on the window and be like, President Trump, please pay attention to us. We desperately need your help. I mean, I don't think there's a more unhinged state in the union than Washington State when it comes to what's happening in public education. I mean, we do a story almost every day. We did a story on the Puyallup, Washington School District a couple days ago where we got sent a picture from an art class that had all these up on the wall, all these insane depictions of President Trump. He was depicted as a pig. He was depicted as a member of the KKK. There was something that said assassination above him. He was depicted, you know, as this creepy McDonald's clown and all these things. And we had to reach out to the school and be like, why is this mural up in a public school setting? And then as soon as they found out that people knew about it, they took it down the next day. We've done stories that are far more sinister than that. One of the things happening in our public schools here is government-sanctioned kidnapping and transing of children. Happens all the time. This is something that President Trump brought attention to during his State of the Union address. This is a disgusting web of anti-family organizations that are seeking to tear apart the nuclear family. So one example we did, it also has to do with the Puyallup School District. There's a young girl named Eleanor. She's 16 years old. She has been missing for 3 months. Her parents don't know if she's dead or alive. And this all stems back to her. She had some childhood trauma, as most kids who identify as transgender these days do. They had some significant childhood trauma as a precursor. She sees her counselor at school. Counselor ends up connecting her to gender clinics, giving her a list of gender clinics that she can go to during the day. Parents had no idea this was going on. Parents had no idea Eleanor thought she was Elliot. That continues to snowball. The school connects her with a group called Oasis, an outside organization for LGBTQ youth. That group connects her with an attorney, a taxpayer-funded attorney that helps her take her parents, who've never been accused of abuse, to court to try to get placed in someone else's custody. The court ends up placing her in the custody of a homeless outreach advocate who she met on the street. This judge is a lesbian judge who's really into the LGBTQ stuff. So you see this whole web. And now Eleanor's been missing. Family doesn't know where she is for 3 months. And under by law in the state of Washington, there was a bill called 5599 in the state of Washington. When I covered it at the time in 2023, I said it was the most dangerous law I had ever seen debated in Olympia. This bill allows the government to hide your child's location from you if your child thinks they're transgender. So in the state of Washington today, you can run away from home as a youth for two reasons and be protected from your parents. If your parents are physically abusing you, which I think we can all understand, and two, if you don't think your parents will support your desired gender. And if it's one of those two reasons, you can go to any shelter in the state of Washington by law, does not have to tell your parents where you are, doesn't even have to tell your parents if you're dead or alive.
God have mercy. Brandy, come back soon. Come back soon. That was wonderful. Thank you. It was awful, but it was wonderful. 16 years old, man. Deeply, deeply evil. Communists are of the devil. Remember that. They are devil-worshipping savages, and they have to be defeated. We will talk to Aaron McIntyre about that and other things in a moment. Before we talk to Aaron, speaking of all this demonic LGBTQ stuff, let me ask you something. Who does your cell service? Who do you have your cell phone with? Verizon? AT&T or T-Mobile? If what you just heard disgusted you, may I suggest, just a suggestion, go to the internet. You can even use that phone. Look up your cell phone provider. Tell me what they've done with LGBTQ stuff. With your money. Are you paying for that kind of stuff? Switch to Pure Talk. They share and promote your values. When you look up where Pure Talk gives back, it's to veterans. This is the patriotic company that hires Americans. You'll feel a lot better about where you send your cell money, and you'll send them a lot less. Average Americans, average family saves like $1,000 a year. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The negotiation didn't have a path to citizenship. It was entirely on their terms in order to get Ukraine funding, right?
Well, I mean, Chris, that's been a failed play for 20 years. So right. You are right that that has been the Democratic strategy for 30 years, maybe. And it has failed to deliver for the people we care about most, the undocumented Americans that are in this country.
It is pretty startling, not just that Democrats say these things on a regular basis, but they say these things without any fear of losing the next election. They'll stare right in the camera. They'll say we care about them the most. They'll tell you people from Haiti built this country, immigrants built this country. Over and over and over again, and it's not just that they say it with their friends behind closed doors. They'll stare right in the camera and say it, and they know they won't pay a penalty. What does that say about us? Joining me now, Orrin McIntyre, host of the wonderful Orrin McIntyre Show. Orrin, I don't know what shocks me more, a slimy little weasel like Chris Murphy saying that, or the fact that he knows he's not going to pay for that at all.
Well, this is how democracy works. Ultimately, you are just counting heads. You're getting votes. And so if you are a party that realizes it can no longer really govern the current majority of Americans, the thing to do is to replace the Americans with someone who will vote for you. The Democrats have had this project for decades. They've been gloating over and over again about how the demographics of the United States are changing, about how all these immigrants are coming in and are natural Democrat voters, no matter how many times we hear Republicans tell us that for some reason the newest batch will be natural conservatives. The truth is that immigrants vote overwhelmingly for Democrats, that non-white populations vote overwhelmingly for Democrats, and they're certainly aware of that. So their whole goal is to get as many of these people into the country as possible, and the more they succeed about that, the more they can be honest about that. They don't have to lie anymore. They don't have to, you know, play the game or put out any other narrative, because ultimately they are moving people into the country who will vote for them along the very lines they are announcing. So why hide the ball once you've completed the operation?
Orrin, why don't Democrat voters care about that? I mean, I'm talking about the American ones.
Because a lot of them agree increasingly that the United States is not really a nation. It doesn't deserve to be a sovereign nation. We're citizens of the world. We're globalists. And ultimately, the United States is just as valuable as any other nation. Why shouldn't you bring many people here? The Democratic Party is more or less a coalition of people who hate the United States and the people of the United States. So it's not terribly shocking that a large number of people who've committed themselves to that ideological axis are ultimately fine with the idea that if their neighbor gets swapped out, it's not going to be a big deal, because they never think it's going to happen to them. It's not going to happen to their neighborhood. I'm sure you remember the Martha's Vineyard stunt where Ron DeSantis sent people to Martha's Vineyard. They disappeared immediately. The liberals know that they're not going to have to live next to their new voters. It's going to be those stupid Republicans who have their states flooded with them.
All right, Orrin, that brings me to my second favorite punching bag, the GOP. What you just said, certainly statistically about foreigners and how they vote when they get here, illegally or legally, it's just a mathematical fact. It can't be argued against. So why do we have so many Republicans in Washington, D.C., who still try to give these people amnesty? They'll stand up and stare right in the camera, and they'll talk about how wonderful legal immigration is over and over and over again. The math doesn't lie, Orrin. If you're a Republican, why would you argue against your own future?
Because democracy is fake. I mean, that really is the only way you can explain the behavior, right? If you had an actual opposition party, if the purpose of the GOP was to fight for control of the country, as you're saying, then the only thing they should be doing is limiting immigration. That makes perfect sense. Again, from just the raw data, we know that more immigrants coming into this country means the GOP loses power. So from a pure political standpoint, there's simply no way you would allow this. And so the only explanation can be the GOP ultimately is not trying to win power. That is literally the only explanation that makes sense. Now, I think another big part of this is the fear of being called racist. Whether we like it or not, that word still holds incredible power inside our society. And anybody who gets it leveled at them feels like they need to panic. They need to run. They have to make some kind of excuse to show that ultimately they are not the big evil man that they're being called. And so many people inside the Republican Party and many even Republican voters are still very worried about this charge and will go out of their way to look as if they are ultimately trying to seek the approval of different minorities inside the country. So I think there is a genuine fear of being labeled racist, but I think there's a also simple fact that the GOP never really believes that it's going to rule this country in any real sense. All they want to do is hold on to power in their areas and manage their constituencies, collect those checks.
All right, Arn, as long as we're talking about every dark thing possible, I said something publicly yesterday loudly, and you echoed it and gave your own take on it. Just from a macro point of view, we currently have a transportation system, one of the two major transportation systems of the country, effectively shut down with 4 or 5 hour wait lines at the airport. And that's because 50% of the political parties in the country want to keep foreigners here. 100 years from now, what are our long-term prospects as a nation?
Well, things are obviously pretty dicey right now. As you noted in that tweet, we're really looking at an existential crisis. We're not in the mode where we're arguing over tax rates or possible distributions of Social Security. We're now arguing over, should we have borders? Should we steal kids from their parents if they don't agree to mutilate them? Should we ultimately even have a real democratic process inside the country? And the answer for the Democrats is no. Actually, we are willing to hold the entire country hostage to make sure that illegals stay here and have the possibility of voting for us down the line. And we know that the left is ultimately willing to do things like imprison Donald Trump or try to kill him or successfully kill Charlie Kirk. None of that has gone away because the right is currently arguing over, you know, the war in Iran or whatever. All of those threats are still very real, and they are going to continue to be a force inside the United States and its politics. So we need a right wing at some level that is willing to fight back and actually fight for power, actually fight for control of this government and the way and the power wields over the people. And if we're not willing to do that, then the simple math says that Democrats will bring enough people in over time to make our votes irrelevant. And at that point, we aren't voting our way out of this. And I don't think anyone wants to see the solutions that come when voting is no longer a, you know, realistic option for changing the country.
Okay. On a possibly lighter note, although it could get dark really quickly, but aren't we getting better? When I say we, I mean the right. I know it's a slow process. I know we still have plenty of Instagrams in the Senate. I understand all that. But we are having a bunch of losers retire, lose primaries. John Cornyn looks like he's on the way to losing one. I know we're not going to have a wonderful GOP next year. I'm not an idiot. But we are trending in the right direction, right?
You would hope so. It seems like that's the case. The problem, of course, is one of speed. I think that you're correct in saying that the current MAGA movement, the kind of the revolution inside the Republican Party, has yielded some of those important changes of my lifetime. It's undeniable that Donald Trump, no matter what you feel about, for instance, the Iran war, has closed the border, has made significant efforts in deportation, has pushed to do things like in birthright citizenship in the 14th Amendment. And these are things that were just unbelievable. They could have never been brought up under the GOP of Mitt Romney or John McCain. So obviously we are seeing a huge shift. But the question is it fast enough? Can we catch up to the damage that the Democrats have done? Because what we're seeing is generationally, you have somebody like Joe Biden bringing in 8 million people or more under his tenure illegally. Even if Donald Trump spends his entire presidency deporting and we get 8 years, God hoping, of J.D. Vance as president, he probably still won't deport every single person that Joe Biden brought in just in that short amount of time. And when you have that kind of asymmetric threat to the longevity of the country, you can't sit around and learn these lessons very slow. We're going fast, but we got to go faster.
Arn, appreciate you as always, my man. I'm back. All right. There are important things, and by the way, positive things going on in the Supreme Court. At least I think they're positive. We better talk to Bill Jacobson about that, our resident Supreme Court expert around here. We'll do that in a moment. Before we do that, maybe right now after all this, it's been a heavy show. Maybe your stomach's burning. Maybe you're already feeling the heartburn come up, and you know what your problem is? You haven't started your cowboy colostrum yet. I was told about this last summer. I was, look, it had been a crappy year. Having this heartburn, especially when I went to bed at night. You know, it's miserable. I'm sitting there, I'm drinking water by my bed. It's horrible. What do we do about that? Well, my sister told me, hey, it's your gut. Why don't you try this cowboy colostrum? I've been taking cowboy colostrum. I love cowboy colostrum. All right. I totally blew her off. But might as well give it a shot. I've not had heartburn one time since. I've not had these stomach aches or whatever. Not one time since. Stuff is friggin' awesome, man. Try some. It's delicious, by the way. It's delicious. You put it in some milk. I put mine in my coffee. CowboyColostrum.com. Use the code JesseTV. We'll be back.
We have lots of phrases that involve two words, the last of which, the second of which is day. Labor Day, Memorial Day, George Washington's birthday, Independence Day, birthday, and Election Day. And they're all particular days. So if we start with that, if I have nothing more to look at than the phrase Election Day, I think this is the day in which everything is going to take place, and or almost everything. And then we have three points in time, 1844, 1872, 1914. And we can ask, what would people have thought on those days is meant by this phrase, Election Day? Which of those should we choose? Which of those dates should we choose?
Okay. Well, I got to say, Justice Alito is not being too coy about what he thinks about when votes should be counted. Joining me now is somebody with a lot more wisdom than I have on these matters, the great Bill Jacobson, Professor Cornell Law. All right, Bill, obviously Justice Alito sounds like he's on our side with this whole Election Day thing. What is this case about, the arguments, the judges? Where do you think this whole thing's going?
Yeah, this is a case arising out of Mississippi. Mississippi has a statute, which is not uncommon, which allows the counting of mail ballots up to 5 days after Election Day. Some states, I believe, have longer periods of time. The question is that preempted by federal law? Because there are three federal laws, one for the House election, one for the Senate, and one for the presidential election, which say that the Election Day is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. That's Election Day. And if you're counting votes after Election Day, are you allowed to do that? And I think Justice Alito is certainly suggesting, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals held, that no, Election Day is when it happens. It's not election month, it's not election season, it's Election Day. And we use that term, Labor Day, Veterans Day, Memorial Day. Those are days. Those are not extended periods of time. There are other issues which are not directly before the court but came up in oral argument. What about early voting? And that's not really an issue here. As long as the early voting is counted on Election Day, I don't think that's an issue and it's not being challenged. And that's what it is. And the Democrats, not surprisingly, want to be able to count forever. Statistically, I've not seen an overall statistical analysis, but I think you and I know from our anecdotal observations over the years, has there ever been an election, ever, where the post-election day counting helped Republicans? It always seems to help Democrats, and that's what this is over. This will be a big blow to the whole mail-in ballot initiative of the Democratic Party. What really has been their ace in the hole, something they have bested Republicans on. But that only matters if you can get all these mail-in ballots counted regardless of when they come in. So this will be a huge blow to the Democrat efforts, mail-in ballot efforts, if the ballots have to be received by Election Day, because it's Election Day, not election season.
Okay, Bill, so the fact that Justice Alito sounds like he's with us is not exactly breaking news. What about the rest of them? How do we think they're going to rule on this? I know I'm asking you to predict the future, but I didn't listen to these arguments. I know you did. How'd it go for us?
Yeah, I listened to the 2 hours, and it appears that there is going to be a majority in favor of voiding these post-election day countings, but I can't say that's a certainty. There are certain cases where you just know that's going to happen. There are always the wild cards here. The Chief Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, maybe Kavanaugh, I don't think so. Gorsuch actually, from his questioning, seemed to be very skeptical of this notion that you can count after Election Day. So I think it's going to go the way of the Republicans. I think it's going to go the way that Election Day is when it has to be received by the election officials. But I can't say that with a huge degree of confidence because most of the justices did not let on how they were feeling. Of course, the three liberal justices didn't hold back at all. Kagan was the least vocal of them, but Sotomayor and Jackson were very aggressive in talking over people and arguing the case. So the fact that they feel the need to do that leads me to think in their conferences, they have a sense they're probably going to lose here.
Ketanji Brown Jackson was talking over people? What? You don't say. Wow. All right. So, Bill, I hate to kneel down on the details, but details matter. If there's a ruling on this, is this something that could be done and affect the midterm elections? Is this a distant future thing?
No, I think it affects the midterms. I mean, this is simply how they count the ballots. This is not who's going to be on the ballot. In a lot of these election cases, the time pressure is you have primaries and you need to get people on the ballot. That's not the case here. This is simply about how they are counted and when they are counted.
Okay. Now, that leads me directly to redistricting. The other thing I'm worried about as it pertains to the midterms. Basically, Bill, this entire segment is me angling to pray for a better outcome on the midterms than I think we're on the way to. How are we looking on redistricting?
Well, there's two aspects of redistricting. One is what's going on in Texas, California, I forget where else, Virginia perhaps coming up. And the Supreme Court's taken a pretty hands-off approach to that, saying they're not going to decide that. And the way that that comes up is that they don't stop, they don't stay various rulings that have been for it or against it. So the Supreme Court on what's going on in Texas, California, potentially Virginia, seems to be taking a hands-off approach, saying let the states decide that issue. There's a different redistricting case, which probably won't have a huge impact this cycle. It might, depending when it comes down. And that's whether race can be used in redistricting, whether in Louisiana you can force the state to have a majority minority, a majority black congressional district, which affects the electoral vote, obviously, also in those states. But for the purpose of the congressional races and the midterms, that would be very important. That's where timing does matter, because if they're going to have to change the districts in Louisiana and other states because they were based on race, that I've seen estimates could affect 4 to 5 to 6 seats, which would swing towards Republicans, because under the Voting Rights Act, there has been a claim, and it's been upheld up until now, that a state like Louisiana must have a certain number of majority black districts, and that may violate the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment as to equal protection of the laws. And so that's been argued, and I think that we don't know how that's going to come out, but that would be an important one. So two aspects of redistricting, which could affect a lot of things.
All right. Sorry, I'm just coming at you because all these things matter to me for the exact same reason I was very honest about, Bill. Immigration cases now. We all know the Democrats bring them in and keep them here as fast as humanly possible for a reason. And it's not because they're so compassionate. What kind of immigration cases are we looking at? Are we going to have a ruling of some kind?
Well, there's one that the court just took, I think, yesterday or today, and they're putting on an expedited hearing schedule so that it will be decided this term. And as you know, this term means by June, having to do with temporary protected status. So I think it's close to 1 million people have been led into the country under this temporary protected status. Most of them are from Central and South America. Haiti, I think, is the biggest contingent. Second biggest is, I believe, Argentina, and not Argentina, Venezuela. And the next is, I think, El Salvador. I might be wrong on that. But most of them are from Central and South America. And the court has agreed to hear whether temporary means temporary. The Trump administration decided not to extend these. They were supposed to be 12 to 18 month protected status. They're now going on multiple decades. When there is a program that Democrats like, temporary never means temporary, it means permanent. We see it with social services, we see it with welfare, we see it with a whole host of things, and we're seeing it that Democrats think it's to their advantage to have these temporary protected status people here, not temporarily, but now forever. And of course, they got a lower court judge to agree with them on that. And so that's really the issue. So that's a big immigration one that's coming up. There are some other ones that are coming up, but I think that's probably the biggest one.
Bill, equal protection plan. That's yours. Kathy Hochul doesn't like it. Why not?
Yeah, so the Equal Protection Project, equalprotect.org, is our organization which brings civil rights challenges to discriminatory laws. And we have brought one against the state of New York regarding something called the STEP program, which runs throughout the state at 56 colleges and universities, funded by the state, provides programming for high school and middle school students. But if you're Black, Hispanic, or Native American, you're automatically eligible. If you're white or Asian, you have to show family economic hardship. So differing standards depending upon your race and ethnicity. That we have filed that case in the federal courts in New York. It's proceeding. The state is fighting it. So Kathy Hochul's administration is fighting to preserve a plainly discriminatory law because it's a law that discriminates against whites and Asians. And we've also sent her a demand letter saying that there's another program that is for college students, virtually identical, and that has the same discriminatory problems, and we're calling on her to remove those discriminatory eligibility factors. We haven't heard back from her. I doubt she'll do it. But we have the crazy situation where state money in New York State is being used to discriminate against white and Asian students. And in our lawsuit, we're representing Asian students and their parents who've been shut out of these programs because of their skin color. It's completely crazy. It shows everything that's gone wrong, not just in New York State, but with this whole DEI stuff everywhere.
Yeah, they go get them, Bill. Thank you, sir. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood, and I just wanted to let you know that I have superior instincts. I accidentally walked into the women's room today, but that's not the important part. The important part is how quickly I recognized my mistake. It was just my senses. They operate at a higher level. I knew immediately what I'd done. I got out of there, and now nobody will ever know. That's who you're watching. I'll see you tomorrow.
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.